welcome everyone to Street and Curb, and that's our theme song, Bittersweet Symphony. Again, I want to welcome everyone to our half-hour show every Wednesday at 5 p.m. here. Today, we're going to emphasize, of course, what we always emphasize, pragmatic and common sense approach to our problems in the country, and also to give a voice of the silent majority. So today's topic is a little different. We're going to talk about the federal budget, the federal deficit, and we're going to see what kind of ramifications there are for the budget and the deficit as they are now and in the future, and what type of corrections maybe we can make for that. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, it's Budget Talk here at Street and Curb.
Think you're dealing with drug poisoning, chemical poisoning, food poisoning? Call the Poison Helpline first for fast, free advice from medical professionals. Call 1-800-222-1222 anytime, anywhere. Save the number, save a life. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Welcome back, everyone, to Street and Curb. I'm your host, Steve Carvelli. What's interesting today is that we're going to talk about the budget, but I want to go over something that maybe we can relate to as individuals, namely how we do our household budget. And we're going to compare how we do household budgets with the national budgeting process. I don't know if you know or not, but the national debt, which is changing as we speak, changing every second of every day, is sitting around $34.7 trillion. That's right, $34.7 trillion. That's about 103,000 per citizen, and there's about 360 million citizens in this country, or 266,000 per taxpayer. Not all citizens are taxpayers, so that number is different. Now, what's interesting about this number is that it is a 122% debt to GDP ratio. What do I mean by that? That our debt as a fraction, which would be the numerator, and the denominator would be the GDP, it is 122%. Just as a point of comparison, in 2000, that ratio was 57.7%. In 1960, it was 52.8%. In 1980, it was 34.5%. So you can see it's a very significant increase, the debt to GDP ratio this year. Now, it's interesting that, in other words, our debt exceeds the country's entire income for the year. If we consider GDP as our nation's income, it would exceed our entire income. Now, if you consider your household budget, does your debt exceed your income for the year? Now, if you own a house, conceivably it will because of price appreciation and housing. But if we take out housing, which would be the big variable, would your debt exceed your income for the year? So, and it's interesting in the fact that when we consider the national debt, that is all the vendors and all the institutions that the government owes money to. There is another comparison here, which is the national deficit. The deficit is a little different than the debt. Basically, it's the amount of money going out that exceeds the amount of money coming in. It is that difference, which is called the deficit. And currently, that is $1.8 trillion. That's right, it's $1.8 trillion. It's interesting, though, it's expected to increase to $2 trillion, which would be about 8% of our gross domestic product. Now, that a number alone, if it does go to $2 trillion, is actually unprecedented in this country outside of war or a major downturn such as a depression. It has never happened before that we have 8% of our GDP going towards the deficit. This is not the debt. This is the deficit, which means the difference between the income coming in and the payments going out. So, again, if you consider your household, when you have a deficit every month, what do you do? Well, you can take out another loan if you qualify for it, but this country does the same thing, so we are taking out loans. You can also try to make more income. You could also cut expenses, or you can go to bankruptcy. So let's compare these scenarios with the federal deficit. So the federal government is in a unique position because the federal government can print money. Printing money does solve a lot of issues. As a matter of fact, a couple politicians wanted to print a $1 trillion note for payments, and that would eliminate the debt. The problem with printing money is that it's inherently inflationary. So depending on what side of the aisle you're on, some people want to print money, some people want to not print money, but that would be inflationary no matter what. The other aspect you can do is how do you generate more income by raising taxes? So that is always being a talking point of politicians about raising taxes. Now, will it generate more income? Well, tax income will increase, so that would generate more income. But it also could stifle growth. Why is that? Because if I raise taxes too many times on people, they take the tax money instead of investing in capital improvements or capital or creating new companies, they use it to pay taxes. So the scenario there is it will stifle growth because you raise taxes. Now, the other aspect of that is the flip side of the political equation. If you can generate income through less taxes, which is more of the Republican or conservative approach. So that idea is that you will generate income by cutting taxes, and they will use the additional income that they're not paying taxes on to spur entrepreneurship and capital investment. But the all-time idea of working would be to cut expenses, because the other aspect of bankruptcy is really not available to the United States. So outside of moving taxes up or down, depending on what side of political persuasion you're at, we have to look at the fact of cutting expenses probably would be the most prudent. And by the way, probably the most difficult. So we are faced with a lot of issues coming up with the there is an idea that there is an approach that the economy could collapse under the debt. It's kind of like the do not pass go signal for the debt. So if the deficit does reach a point of 175 to 200% debt to GDP, which is what I talked about before, is that you take the national debt, this is not the deficit, and divide it by the GDP. If it goes to 175 to 200%, that will be a never-ending cycle in which the economy will collapse under the debt. Now, right now, as I mentioned earlier in the segment, it's 122%. So this is concerning because we have basically increased and doubled our deficit and debt in the last year alone, that we could reach this within 10 years. So there may not be a point of being correcting it. Now, why is this a big issue? Because in the next 10 years, we're going to have periods of higher interest rates. Rates go up, they go down, depending on the Federal Reserve, depending on the economy, exterior factors, interior factors, business trends, and whatever. So if we have periods of higher interest rates, debt load increases. Why is that? Because we need to pay the interest to the debt. And if interest rates increase, we have to pay more money. So therefore, we cannot businesses to start new. We have to government, we have to increase taxes to reduce spending, which in itself is a negative thing. So in other words, it's a vicious cycle when it comes to the deficit. Higher interest rates are not the friends of deficits. Higher interest rates are not the friends of the economy. The government will have to adjust their spending to reduce the debt, to reduce the interest to the debt, and it becomes very problematic on how we go forward. The basic line here, and under this Wharton study, is that the economy will collapse upon the debt, and there will be no cycle and no avenue for the United States to get out of it. When it comes to debt, the United States, as a country that it's indebted, I believe it's ranked 16th in the world of indebtedness. There are some companies that are very Western that are ahead of us. Japan's ahead of us. Greece is ahead of us. But the United States is a major industrial power, ranked 16, which is in the higher percentage of all the nations in the world. So this is something that we really have to look at in this country, whether you're a Republican, whether you're a Democrat, is that the federal deficit is a very big problem. And in the next segment, we're going to talk about how we can analyze some of these problems, how we can grasp some of these problems, and then maybe come up with a path forward. So we're going to take a quick break here at Street and Curb. Join us back in a couple minutes, and we'll continue our discussion.
First Responders Children's Foundation takes care of the children and families the brave ones leave at home. Help us help them. These are the beautiful voices of police officers, firefighters, nurses, and teenagers who remind us that we can come together and create harmony and unity. Brave to 24365 to learn how you can help your first responder community today.
Welcome back, everyone, to Street and Curb. I'm your host, Steve Carvelli. Join us every week, Wednesday at 5 p.m. right here, where we're talking politics, we're talking the economy. Today, we're talking about the federal deficit, and it's generally a not good scenario. All the way around, the fact that it's increasing so fast and that it's a good percentage of our GDP. It's interesting that if spending goes unchecked, you know, what happens to this country? Well, number one, our debt ranking has declined because of the government spending and because of the deficit, which makes it even more difficult to acquire financing, because when the debt scenario has unveiled itself and our debt rating has gone down, it means that we are ranked lower and it's more difficult to obtain favorable interest rates on financing. So it is not that big of an issue in this country because we have the ability of printing money and we are a major industrial power, but it is a sign that people are looking into weaknesses in the country that really go to our bottom line and our finances. So when it comes to this, how do we fix it? Well, we've kind of outlined raising taxes, lowering taxes, what that does to the economy, what that does to private enterprise and so forth. But the only clear way that seems to work would be cutting spending. So we have to really see how we can cut spending in this country without really compromising a lot of the services that people expect or the basic services people expect. But what's interesting in this economy environment under this administration is that we are spending more even in wartime. We're spending more than even during the Depression. We are spending more than even during every previous recession this country's ever had. And it's interesting that Biden's executive orders, just as an example, on student loan debt. Remember, the Supreme Court struck down the student loan debt forgiveness, but the Biden administration has been using executive orders to reduce student loan debt or eliminate it by using certain parameters or certain schools of certain people. That the cost of that student loan write-down has now exceeded all the savings of the Inflation Reduction Act. So again, it is increasing the debt, and a questionable issue because the Supreme Court had struck down that whole premise. In the latest budget, you'll see a lot of economic impact grants and environmental grants that was really supposedly helping minorities and impacted areas and going to nonprofits to do that. But basically, there's a lot of community groups getting these grants that it's really acting as a no more as a get out the vote incentive rather than serious impact on the economy in those areas or environment. And there's a lot of those grants, and that is buried into the budget. So again, it is another get out the vote strategy, just like the student loan forgiveness is a get out the vote strategy, which goes, you know, goes into the equation of our deficiting. So, you know, it's hard to differentiate what is good spending and bad spending, but bad spending is kind of like very executive order spending that really helps certain people. That seemed to be a get out the vote strategy. So again, spending is the issue. And I've mentioned before that interest rates are not the friend of the deficit. And we are still in a period of higher interest rates. If you look at everyone on Wall Street, everyone's counting that the Federal Reserve is going to cut rates. And this is why the stock market goes up. Cutting rates is good for the economy because it spurs economic growth. But we have had stubborn inflation. We have had interest rates had that stayed higher longer. We are above the 2% target inflation of the Federal Reserve. We're sitting at about 3.5%. And it has not come down much from the 3.5 over the last 3 to 6 months. So interest rates are, opposed to what a lot of the pundits want as reducing the interest rates. So this is not good generally for the economy. It's not good for the deficit. And higher interest rates for a longer period of time can have some adverse effects on how the economy proceeds, even with growth. So because it's mean more money going to service the debt, it puts a pressure on the government as well as the economy. The important factor that I want to bring up here is that we have doubled our debt over the last year. That is really of your household. If you doubled your debt over the last year, where would you be right now? You may be living back at your parents' house. You may be borrowing from your in-laws. But if you doubled your debt over the last year and you really haven't had a double of income, or you didn't buy a business to offset the debt, you're going to be in pretty big trouble. And on a national scene, we are probably mirroring that to some extent. The issue now comes to the fact, where do we go from here? And at Street and Curb, we really want to pride ourselves in discussions of practical solutions with more broad-based effects to everybody. So it doesn't just affect one portion of the economy or one portion of the country rather than the other. So I guess what they talk about on some of the budget kind of is that what do we need to fix, what do we need to modify, and what do we need to really overhaul? And a lot of talk is about our tax code. And what we do in this country is that we always want to tax the higher 1%. And we keep taxing them. States like New York taxes them, New Jersey, the high tax states of Illinois, keeps taxing the higher percentage points. And they don't realize that eventually those people walk and they do, put up roots somewhere else in the country that has a lower tax profile. And that will happen in this country eventually. But again, you can't keep taxing the top 1%, hoping that they can solve the issues everywhere. We need widespread tax reform. It may be taxing the higher 1% more, but it also needs to have more even-based taxes throughout the spectrum. We also have to consider overhauling Social Security and Medicare. Again, they are really big drains on the budget, and justifiably so. Everyone wants to work and get their Social Security when they retire. Everyone, when they turn 65, want to get their Medicaid going. It is generally considered a earned entitlement in this country. And a lot of politicians always put a hands-off idea on Social Security and Medicare because, they don't think it would alienate voters. But we have to address this sooner. Social Security, as it's running now, did you realize that this year more people are turning 65 than almost ever in this country? It is the baby boomer generation getting older. And again, it's putting a lot of pressure on Social Security and some of the government services, and they cost a lot of money. So again, overhauling Social Security and Medicare may not be something we want to discuss in an election year, but it probably needs to be discussed within the next 4 to 5 years and really having some practical changes on how Social Security and Medicaid are determined. Well, one of the big processes is that we should probably have a more enhanced transparency of the budget process. Executive orders coming from the president that pretty much are not transparent to the Congress or the Senate, not transparent to the American people because they are executive orders. So again, you would see some more transparency in how the budget process is done. It's probably a good fact. Everyone talks about transparency, but whether any political party has got the nerve to really allow it, names to be seen, but it is something that needs to be really addressed. We're going to take a quick break right now. When we come back, we're going to talk about some different approaches and how we fund the government. So we're going to take a quick break here in Street and Curb, and we'll be back in a minute.
It's pouring rain. It's real dark outside. Your heart starts beating really, really fast. You've never done anything so hard in your life. This is boot camp. This is the real thing now. It's such extreme pain, you don't understand how you can finish. I began to feel that there was no way I was ever going to have my title, U.S. Marine. It takes special inner strength, courage, and desire to do this. I was just thinking, I'm so close. I'm so close. And when I finished, I was like, I'm done. I did it. The moment I will never forget is when this drill instructor that I admire so much comes up to me straight in front of me, put her arm on my shoulder and said, good morning, Marine.
PFC Summer Volkman became a Marine. Can you? Visit Marines.com or call 1-800-MARINES. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Welcome back, everyone, to Street and Curb. I'm your host, Steve Carvelli. Again, we talk about pragmatic solutions to our political and economic issues in this country. Today, we're talking about the federal budget, the federal debt, and the federal deficit. They're all different. They're all high. And they're all a problem going forward in this country. In the last segment, we talked a little bit about some of the solutions, and especially the hands-off solutions, and you know, the kryptonite solutions of touching Social Security or Medicaid or anything like that. The political year, probably not going to happen, but again, it's worth a look at and probably a talk. I also talked about in the last segment about transparency. When you have a president that signs executive order after executive order and wants to bypass Congress, even though it's a Democratic-leaning Congress, you're not going to get transparency. Another aspect that we should focus on is incremental funding. Incremental funding is what happens when we keep lifting the debt ceiling up. We always do stopgap funding measures to keep certain agencies running. Incremental funding doesn't get into the root of the cause. We have to look at the entire structure down to the core, and you have to build reform from the bottom up and not from the top down. Incremental funding has its points, it has its purposes, especially when you have a mixed Congress and it's very, very difficult to get anything with a split Congress. But incremental funding actually enhances the problem. Over time, it enhances the problem because we're not getting to the core of the issue and not being able to do fundamental reforms that start from the bottom of an institution and not from the top. But that, you know, every time we lift the debt ceiling up and we have a vote and we have to keep lifting it up and we kick the can down the street for, you know, I guess about 5 or 6 months, and we go through this every time, we always, you know, increase the debt ceiling because a default would seem unfathomable in this country. So, you know, we're between a rock and a hard place, but incremental funding is part of the issue that causes a lot of these things with the debt and deficit. Another aspect is enhanced technologies. We are probably a technological crossroad in this country with AI, but enhanced technologies, including AI, can help create redundancies in the government administration of services that can cut costs, administrative costs, and also cut labor costs. Again, with this type of situation, if we're cutting labor components to the government, remember the biggest employer in the country, if you cut labor, what are you going to do? You're going to cut voters. So again, you know, politicians, especially on the Democratic side, may be less reluctant to be able to use enhanced technologies to cut costs because it doesn't go in favor with their constituencies. But again, you know, with all the talk of AI, AI builds a lot of redundancies in administration of government services, and it will eliminate the need for a lot of people. So why not take advantage of it? But again, you know, AI itself has got a lot of negative baggage coming with it, and cutting labor components of the government probably will not enhance voter appeal to certain constituencies of politicians. So again, it is a problem there, but again, it is a necessary conversation to have. And lastly, I want to talk about is a bipartisan committee to review budget processes and initiatives, and also able to avoid political patronage, especially when it comes to a lot of the pork barrel projects. Again, bipartisan committee, a totally committee that's bipartisan that reviews the budget process without any type of indicator of which way they're going to go, and looking at it from an enhanced perspective of a bipartisan committee. Now, we do have these committees. However, depending on how they vote and what their constituents want at home, it becomes much more difficult for them to get a situation through. So again, bipartisan committee would be very nice. But one of the issues that we have to remember is that, you know, we need accountability in this country. Just like in your, when a family member makes an expense, you know, someone buys a car without telling the other partner, someone does this, someone does this, someone spends discretionary money on money they shouldn't be doing. You know, there's consequences and a responsibility. You know, you have to cut the budget somewhere else. You have to make adjustments. So again, when it comes to budgeting, it seems that the households in this country do a much better job than the government. Now, granted, the government is not a household, but the same rules seem to apply. There has to be transparency, accountability, understanding of what acquisitions do and how they impact the bottom line of your household or the economy. So again, there should be repercussions for exceeding constraints on budgeting. There should be accountability, transparency, the use of technology, which is very important, and again, not focusing on incremental changes. The federal debt and the federal deficit are probably the biggest Achilles heels of this country going forward. It will impact every one of our lives, and it will impact our lives in a very negative way. If it costs more to borrow money because of the government, and you continue have to keep paying more and more money to borrow, you're going to be less likely to build your business. You're going to be less likely to expand your business or put the addition on your house or, you know, finance your kids' education. And in every level that way, it becomes more difficult to move forward. And if this happens, this country doesn't move forward. So, again, we haven't heard a lot of talk about the federal deficit and the federal debt. It's only, and recently I've heard some talk about on some talk shows that how this, if we reach this threshold of no return, if we go up to this level within the next 5 to 7 years, we may not be able to correct it. It's very, very problematic, and it's a very big issue for us. So again, what we want to do in Street and Curb is present these issues to you. You make your own mind up. You figure out where you need to go and how you need to do it. It is not up for me to tell you what to do. It's not up for your politician, your elected representatives. We have to move this forward as a country, and we have to take down the partisan barriers that are preventing this from being solved. So again, we'd like to thank you for being with us this week. We're running out of time. We'll see you next week, where we're going to talk about more issues on the politics, the economy in this country, the trends in this country, but again, giving you a pragmatic solution for it. So again, we'll see you next week. Join us next week for Street and Curb. Have a good week, everyone.